All right, hockey fans, listen up, because we've got something special cooked up for playoff season. It's called the Daily Faceoff Playoff Parlay Challenge, and it's going to add some serious spice to your playoff experience. Now, here's the deal. Every playoff game, you're going to be faced with a handful of questions. It's like your own personal playoff puzzle, and it's free to join. And there are prizes, because who doesn't love winning stuff? Daily winners, you're getting hooked up with gift cards. Treat yourself to some nation gear or maybe even your favorite jersey. And for the big dogs, the people who can win an entire round, it's straight, cold, hard cash. We're talking about real dough for your hockey knowledge. So lace up those skates, stretch those thumbs, and get ready to show off your hockey IQ in the Daily Faceoff Playoff Parlay Challenge. Sign up today and play every game day at games.dailyfaceoff.com and prove your puck prowess.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds. At Mint Mobile, we like to do the opposite of what Big Wireless does. They charge you a lot, we charge you a little. So naturally, when they announced they'd be raising their prices due to inflation, we decided to deflate our prices due to not hating you. That's right. We're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month slows. Full terms at mintmobile.com.
Hi, I'm Michael Layton, and you're watching Nasty Knuckles Podcast.
You're listening to Nasty Knuckles, the Hockey Outlaws Podcast, with your host, Derek Nasty Suttermeyer, and former Philadelphia Flyer enforcer, Riley Cote, as they go behind the scenes with your favorite NHL players. Time to face off.
All right, welcome back. What's happening, Nasty?
What's up, Riggs? Missed another men's league game?
Oh, yeah, you know.
We needed
life
you.
Life gets in the way.
Life does, yeah. I know, Cuddles. Listen, I'm just going to tell you this. We lost.
I heard.
First loss in a shootout.
What happened?
You would have snapped one home.
Probably.
With that Tovey stick.
You think so?
Yeah, you would have.
What happened, what happened to your
I got
execution?
Stoned.
Yeah?
Meech stoned me.
Let me do
it.
Let me guess. You pump faked?
I thought in my head I gave a really good Messier pump fake, and then I was trying the old garage door opener.
Oh, yeah.
But it was a terrible fake after I watch it, which I will not give video of it because I'm going slow. But I thought, oh, I'm going to come in, I'm going to fake it, get it moving, and go through his five hole. I did get it through his five hole, but he got it with a stick. So.
Well, we need to see the footage. We're going to have to dig this out of the archives,
no,
baller.
Because I didn't score. I did score in the game, though. I did score in the game. I had a goal.
There you go.
But I didn't score when it counted.
High
it went
performer.
Like eight shots. We only had nine guys there. I went eight.
You were the eighth shooter?
Well, I knew where I know where I stand. But you would have. What? JD didn't score. Matty didn't. No one scored. We didn't have one guy score.
Really?
Joey stopped a lot.
It's pretty impressive. No goals and eight shots?
Yeah, especially with our crew. Like, all we right. had some. I never thought it'd get to me. I was hoping it wouldn't. Especially when that guy scored and I had to go. Elvis was not happy.
No.
I guess he like pushed the table up in Dunlop's. He was sitting up there watching. He was mad. I'm like, sorry, buddy.
I think I would have shot low blocker.
I think your shot would have scored.
You think so?
I think I should have just shot. Probably would have missed the net or hit him right in the logo. But either way, we lost.
Hey, it happens.
It happens. Flyerland.
Ooh.
Ooh. It's been a tough they lost four straight.
Since last week,
since last week.
And they were playing some good hockey there.
They
we
really
talked
were.
About it last week.
They really were. And TK is back, which is good to see him back. Coots is not coming back.
Yeah, I know. It was kind of a surprise based on all the excitement around him coming back and playing a few games. But and we talked about this before. You know, maybe that is the play. You know, I think this was the medical staff calling the shots on this one. You know? Don't risk the injury.
Yep.
You got 4 months to just
really get
just to really better. Feel optimal and you may get a couple of games under your belt, but there's still that risk of getting hurt. You just can't justify losing, him.
Yeah, no.
Down the road. So I think probably safe play. What is there to really prove?
Right.
Skate. Do all the stuff you can do. Some pros and
Baller said he looked like one of the best players on the ice. Said he was buzzing
around.
Not
surprised.
No, I'm not either. But like I said, TK's back, which is good. Scored a couple goals right away. He's at 29 Gs. We've got to get him to 30.
Yeah.
I always said he could score 30, and he's been hurt for a while. He would have had well over 30, I think.
I think so
Frosty's
too.
Still hot.
Frosty,
boy.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Morgan Frost playing like really well. It's nice to see. Dropped a game last night to our buddy in St. Louis there, a few of our buddies, Braden Shen and Craig Berube. But Rocky Thompson was the bench boss last night. Torch has been up in the nosebleeds watching with Danny, I'm assuming. But Rocky said...
I just said it's not about X's and O's. I said, and quite frankly, it looks like some guys in here don't even care. They're just not trying. And
yeah, part of his quote. That was a bold statement. I mean, obviously... A legitimate statement.
Right.
I'm hopeful that the guys heard it because, I mean, Rocky is no bullshit.
Right.
And if he's saying that, especially as an assistant coach, you know, obviously stepping in that role for a couple of games, you know, to me, they should be listening.
Very carefully. And you know, you're an assistant coach. Like, as an assistant, you're kind of the good guy.
Right.
Right? Like, you got to kind of be in between. And for him to say that. You know, like that's saying something. And I think he's very well respected.
Yep.
You know, and I know the guys, we've talked to some of the guys, and they really like him. So that probably was, I'm sure they heard it.
Yeah. And I think the guys that he's addressing in that comment know.
Yeah.
You know,
yeah.
Like I think, and the teammates know, right? I mean, I think you know deep down within if you're pouring your heart into something versus not. And, it's a tough time of year, right? It's obviously you're not in a playoff position, not even close, and you know you've been out for a while, and it's tough to get up for these games. But you are a pro; you're getting paid a lot of money. There's no excuse to not show up, in my opinion.
Yeah, especially like, you know, who knows what happens next year? Like, what pieces get moved, if any? How it's going to be? You got to play. You got to play hard. It is a tough time of the year, especially when you're not making the playoffs. Starting to get nice outside, probably just. Not really as focused as they should be, some of them. Obviously, whoever he was talking about, I don't want to speculate, but either way, I'm sure it was heard.
Yeah.
Clear.
Oh, I'm sure. And what do you think about Torts being up in the press box? What's that all about?
I don't know. I don't know if he's addressed why he's doing that. Usually, you've seen it in preseason.
Of course, yeah.
But never. I don't know if I shouldn't say it's never happened. Obviously, it's probably happened, but I'm not sure what maybe him and Danny are just trying to get on the same page of what they think of certain players. I mean, Ronnie Adder got called back up. I know Lehigh's trying to make that push, too, to get in the playoffs. So, I'm not really sure what's going on.
I mean, I get it a little bit. I mean, maybe you're discussing the game in real time with the GM, but I mean, like... There's a ton of different video angles. You could easily sit down in an office and break down the game and really focus, stop, start the game and break it down, which they probably have done several times as coaches do. Just kind of curious and like, you know, is this one of those, you know, psychological games or is this like legitimate, like, you know, strategy around becoming a better team, like, you know,
we gotta ask
Torres, exactly. Be curious, you know, because I'm always interested in like the thinking behind certain things because sometimes you've seen coaches, I've had coaches, I've worked with coaches that there's a lot of mind games that go on, and you always wonder, like, where is this coming from? Is there actual. You know, there's an actual reason behind this, or is this like kind of just like a flex, get people to talk about it? You know, the players are talking, media's talking. Like, does it really move the needle at the end of the day? I'll never know. Never know, but just curious. So, I want to get your opinion on it.
Well, I don't know.
You don't know?
I thought you maybe had
Torts on speed dial.
I didn't have him on speed dial to ask him that right now. Hopefully we can get him on. And it is a great question, though, because I do wonder what the thinking is. I don't know if he's addressed it, like I said. But
I haven't heard.
Be interesting to get his thoughts on what, you know, what's going on there. We're in the East, stay in the East for a minute. The wild card race has heated up.
Oh, yeah.
It's pretty interesting. Florida with a big win last night over Buffalo.
Yep.
Who's trying to sneak in there. So Florida jumped above the Islanders.
Yeah.
Because they have more wins, you know, in regulation. Yeah.
Our boy Alex Lyon.
Yeah, man.
He's ripping it up since last week.
He had a tough week here in Philly. He had a tough game, I should say. And his next four games, he's 4-0.
Mixing a shot out there.
Yeah, one point is goals against, I think, 1.25 save percentage, 959. Pretty amazing at such a
critical time of the
critical
year.
Critical time. And he's bumped them up into a spot. So I don't know how long Bob's out, but Alex has kind of taken the ball and run with it here the last four games anyway. Mm-hmm. So it'll be interesting to see Pittsburgh's falling off. Buffalo actually has two games at hand on all those teams. So, you know, if they could win those two games at hand, they're right there. Kind of right back up in the mix. They have 81 points.
Right.
So it'll be interesting to see.
It's going
to
be a grind right to the last game, obviously.
But it makes it fun, at least the last few games.
I love that.
You watch those teams anyway. Because they're going to be – it's basically the playoffs for them right now.
Yeah.
For their last four
games.
And, Boston Bruins, our buddy Jimmy Montgomery, we've talked about him all year. 60 wins, man.
It's crazy.
Only the fourth team
ever
to ever do that. And they have a few games left. 60-12-5. It's crazy. 60 insane. Wins, man. And they, you know, obviously the President's Trophy winner, it scares me.
Yeah.
The playoffs.
Well, there's just a lot of pressure, obviously, right?
Yeah.
It's like everyone's looking at you, and I get it. But
they're good.
They got pros.
Man.
You know, they know how to win. You know, some of these guys have won before.
Yeah.
Yeah. Just staying healthy, right?
Yeah.
And just kind of riding this wave.
We
is the biggest thing.
Baller and Devo, we were talking about earlier. Which goalie you go with? Because they got such a great 1-2 punch, you know, like, and they seem to just split the games. So I wonder how Jimmy's going to handle that. You should call him, give him a call, and ask him what his plan is.
See what show him your hand a little bit there, Jimmy.
Like, hey, Monty, what's up?
What are you thinking?
Who's starting game one? Once they figure out who they're playing, but it is amazing. 60 wins, man.
Yeah.
Crazy.
No jokes, not by accident.
No, it's not.
How about the West?
Yeah, man. A little bit of a race out there. Your boys in Winnipeg.
Yeah,
man, are they struggling right now?
They're struggling between winter and springtime there. They can't figure it out.
It's probably snowing right now, isn't it? In Calgary's fighting, and they lost a huge game to Chicago last night at home.
Yeah, that's a tough one.
Man,
drop.
Like, that was a huge one. You would think you're going to win that game.
You should, right?
You have to, and at this point, I think Seattle's going to make. I think they've got a big
enough cushion.
There.
Yeah, I agree.
So it's going to come down to Winnipeg and Calgary. So it's at least fun to watch those teams that are fighting because they're, like I said, they're like playoff games.
Yep.
So it'll be interesting. It's hard to believe we have our guest on today, Michael Layton. That year, the biggest year is the 2009-10 season, and we were in that spot.
Yeah, I know,
fighting
right?
Just to get in.
Yeah, it's hard to believe.
You never know what's going to happen, right? So you just got to get in.
That's the truth.
In.
You just got to get in, right?
Yeah.
Anybody's game after that. Yeah,
yeah, it's crazy.
Yeah, it was an interesting conversation.
Yes.
Yeah, so are we ready to rock? Or you got anything else
now? I think we're ready to rock,
I think
man.
So, too.
112?
112.
Yep.
With our boy Michael Layton, presented to you by our friends at Curaleaf. Welcome to Curaleaf, a medical marijuana dispensary. Whether you're a longtime patient or you're just getting acquainted with this incredible plant, Curaleaf of Pennsylvania is honored to guide you along your medical marijuana journey. Have questions? Google Curaleaf PA or stop by one of their 18 locations across the Commonwealth or visit Curaleaf.com/locations. Let's go, Nast.
Let's go.
Welcome back. I'm Riley Cote.
And I'm Derek Settlemyer. And this week, Riggs, we have a good friend joining us. Played with the Flyers a couple times. He was in the organization. One of the nicest guys I've ever met. Very, very great professional as well. Mr. Michael Layton. Lates, what is up, brother?
Not much, boys. Good to see you and good to talk to you. It's been a while.
I know. Way too long, man. We say this every week when we're catching up with guys. It's just it sucks we can't see everyone as much as we'd like, but it's great seeing your face, man. What's going on in your life, brother?
Not too much, man. Just keeping busy, working for the Windsor Spitfires in the OHL. So goalie coach there. It's
taken a lot of my time, and I have three young children who are all in hockey and soccer and other activities. So between that and coaching, and I started my own business training goalies. So trying to juggle all that. It's been busy, but a lot of fun, obviously.
Man, I'll tell you what, that is a racket, that goalie training. My son, Elvis, is a goalie, Lates. I don't know what he's thinking, but he's a goalie. And these, like, you go for these sessions in privates. Yeah. I'm not going to say what they cost because I love my guy, Bozak. Man, that's awesome. You're able to, like, give back and teach. Do you enjoy that?
I do. Yeah. I've just been doing a lot of small group stuff. So I'm really focusing on the goalies, and usually I have max of four goalies on the ice at a time and try to get, you know, two to four shooters. And it's fun. I enjoy doing it, and I enjoy working with the younger kids. And I also, even the shooters, you know, I try to add things in for them to make it enjoyable and have them come out, shoot for me. So I enjoy doing it. Yeah.
That's nice. Awesome.
Is how much has changed since you've, you know, exited the game? It hasn't been that long, but is philosophy around coaching very similar? Is there, you know, is there tweaks? What's going on with that?
Well, I'm sure you felt the same way. It was obviously like a kind of a hole in your life a little bit from not being around the game and around the guys in the locker room, and it's just a totally different world. So I took some time off. Two or three years, obviously COVID messed things up, but I got a lot of family time, which was amazing. The last, you know, 3 to 5 years of my career, I was away from my family a lot. So I really tried to focus on that. And it was amazing just being around them and you know, being able to jump on the ice with them and coach them and do things with them has been great. So, and I still try to do as much as I can to help out and be around as much as I can right now. Yeah. But I do miss the game. I do miss the game. You know, that's like I said to you, it's, but being back into coaching now, it's, you kind of get that feel. It's a little bit different, but you're still around the room. Now I'm in a coach's room, but you're still got a good group of guys there, and you know, being around the trainers and medical staff, it's just, it's fun. I enjoy being around all that.
Yeah, I hear that. Well, how much has changed, you know, in regards to goaltending? Has there been that much change since you've exited the game, or is it very similar technique and all that?
Not too much. You know, at the end of my career, I kind of got back into more of athletic, reacting goalies, where, you know, maybe 5 years prior to my retirement, it was still more getting into positional and blocking goalies. Like JR was just on his way out. But
okay,
right now, it's still that hybrid, you know, athletic, positional, but you got to be able to react. The puck moves so fast now, and the game's so quick that if you don't have fast feet or you're a slow goalie, it's tough to move around the net.
Yeah, that's the truth. And there's got to be, you know, with the high skill game that exists now, you know, you talk about Michigans, reverse Michigans, all this stuff that wasn't a thing when you played, probably, like, you know, like, you're talking about a whole other dimension of offense.
No, it's, you know what, you know, just being on the ice with these 16-year-olds, 19, 20-year-olds right now with the Spitfires, like, to see the skill these kids have with the puck, it's crazy. These kids are probably have the same skill, if not more, than when I entered the NHL, of a lot of the guys back in, like, you know, 2020, you know, 01 or 02. Like, yeah, these kids are unbelievable. The way they handle the puck and the things they can do with it now. And they're starting when they're 4 or 5 years old. That's why, you know, now these kids that started when they were 7 are now 16, 18 years old. It's crazy. It's crazy. Yeah. It's fun to see, though. It's fun to watch.
Yeah, no doubt.
Elvis was his last year of Mike this year. He's 8 years old. And at that level, I may have told you this, Riles, he had on 3 occasions kids try to do a Michigan. They're 8 years old and almost get it. And I told him, if they ever do that to you, you slash them right in the back of the legs. I don't care if you get kicked out of the game.
From behind the net?
Yeah. If they Michigan him, I'd say you have free reign to just fucking
come around the net with a mohawk. Yeah, we actually, my son plays U10, so the kids are 9 years old, and one of the kids on his team pulled Michigan off this year, grabbed the puck out of the corner on a stick, looked up and just skated to the net and went around and tucked it in. It was pretty amazing. Yeah.
Amazing. Your son's a goaltender?
No, unfortunately not.
No.
All my kids didn't want to play goalie. No, he showed interest when he was a little bit younger. I went out and bought him all the gear. You know, it is nasty.
Yeah,
gear. Oh yeah, it's Christmas time. He was in the helmet, hat. I got him everything, and that lasted about 3 weeks. I got him I had him liking it for a bit, and then he just kind of veered off. He likes scoring goals.
Yeah, right? Yeah. Nothing quite like the feeling of scoring goals, right?
Yeah. I thought Elvis was going to go the other way this year because he was splitting the net at might levels, but they let him play out when he didn't play goalie, and he loves that. Yeah. He loves playing out, but he's back full-time goalie this year. He got some new pads, so he thinks he's cool, you know.
Yeah. You know what? It's really tough at a young age. You know, you might enjoy playing goalie, but sometimes you don't get many shots, or you're sitting on the bench, like you said. So
yeah,
I get where that's at. And I still enjoy playing out. Like, I'm out with these in the OHL in practice right now, and I'm trying to dangle these players. I just poke it off my stick in a second, but I still enjoy it. Right. It's just, they all get a kick out of me just running around trying to fucking snipe guys and toe drags, and they just poke it away from me. It's fun. I enjoy it.
That's awesome. I'm actually working in the North American Hockey League junior team here called the Philadelphia Rebels. And it's been a blast because I'd been away from almost 2.5 years from the Flyers, unfortunately. But it's so much fun, like you were saying, being around. The kids are great, and they're the same age range there. And it's been a lot of fun. And Elvis is like, I don't care about Flyers. I want you to stay here with the Rebels. Like, these are his guys, you know. But it's a lot of fun, and I'm sure you are enjoying it. And you're working with Andy Delmore.
Yes. Yeah. He's the D coach. I'm the goalie coach. So we got a good group. Mark Savard's head coach. And
Smith, is he? So, oh, I didn't know that. Oh, that's cool.
So we got a good group of guys. And like I said, it's just fun being in the room and hanging out and talking hockey and just being around that. It's fun.
So, Leitch, you get drafted in the back in 99. Hello?
Oh, you got an old landline?
You got a landline? Yeah. Oh, yeah. Those exist? I didn't know that. I had a landline here. I've been paying for it. I don't know what the number is. I don't even have a phone.
It's cheaper for me to actually have it. If I get rid of it, my bill goes up 20.
Oh, okay. Well, that makes sense. Yeah. Sorry. So anyway, 1999, you're drafted in the sixth round, 165 overall. You step right in as 20-year-old into the American League, and you end up playing 52 games, man. What was that like going from, you know, junior right to the pro level? Now you're playing against men, and not only playing, but the majority of the schedule that year.
Yeah, it was, I'd say a successful junior career. And, you know, turning pro, you don't really know what to expect, right? I get a call saying, okay, you're going to go to Norfolk, Virginia.
What?
Yeah, exactly. So I grab my MapQuest and I jump in my car and head out to Norfolk, Virginia. And so I really didn't know what to expect, but you know, it was a great year for me. We had a good team and a good bunch of guys, and it was an easy transition from the OHL to junior. And you know, the Hawks were pretty supportive and giving me opportunities and always communicating. So it turned out to be a great year. I got a lot of games in. We had the All-Star team. So
yeah,
that's amazing.
That's definitely one of the highlight of my careers right there, is just jumping into pro and kind of just smooth sailing into it.
What would you say like the biggest adjustments were for that year? I mean, obviously you said, you know, the guys that you're playing against are men, obviously shooting a little harder. I mean, like, what kind of adjustments are you dealing with then? Is it just simple things, or is it more just the men?
You know, I was lucky enough to always skate with good guys like Andy Delmore in the summer, right? So I always had good shooters. I skated with the Hatcher brothers sometimes. So
okay.
You know, I always, the shots, I don't think was that big of an adjustment for me. It was more traffic and tips in front of the net. Like, these kids were a lot better at that, right? They've done it for a while. And whenever the puck went back to the point, you were always fighting traffic. And I think that was one thing I had to get good at and learn to deal with, you know, early in my career.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, they're really good at that, right? I mean, that is definitely a strategy. And guys are probably a little bit bigger and, you know, stronger, you know, harder to move in front of the net. So you probably have to work a little bit more at that.
Yeah.
Yeah. And you are known as the shutout king of the American Hockey League, which is fucking so impressive. 50 super shutouts, bro. Yeah. Like, that's amazing. I don't think that'll get broken. I mean, who knows? But that's a pretty amazing stat.
Yeah, that was, until the end of my career, I really didn't know anything about it. I knew I was, you know, had pretty good stats, and someone came up to me and said, yeah, you know, you're five away from Johnny Bauer, right?
Yeah,
sure. That's okay.
That's pretty cool.
And then as I got closer, kind of more attention was drawn to it. And,
when I did beat it in Chicago, you know, or I was in Rockford, you know, Chicago did an amazing job celebrating it. And
that's awesome.
It was just a great moment. My family got to come on the ice, and so it was pretty cool. And then after I beat it, I got a few more, and then I was with Chicago Wolves, and I was in Cleveland and got my 50th shutout with my family there too.
Oh, that's awesome.
Cool. Yeah.
That's really cool.
Yeah.
So we got to bring this up, hockeyfights.com. Your fight with Cam Ward when you're in Norfolk and playing Lowell, what a shit show that was. Kind of walk us through that, like, because that was crazy, because you didn't go till near the end, right? Like, you guys were kind of just moving around, but I'll let you explain what happened.
Yeah, it was you know, the period ended, and you know, there was chirping going on, and I was almost already in the room, and someone's like, get back out there, and I went out there, and the coaches are swinging at each other. Tom Rowe throwing at each other, and then I think Sean Thornton might have grabbed Tom Rowe, and like it just turned into a big chaotic scene, right? So it was a weird brawl, because it was a scrum, and then one of the referees, linesman, ends up breaking his leg. He got,
is that what happened?
Yeah, snapped his femur or something. He was out the rest of the year. He's on the ice screaming, and then it would break up, and all of a sudden one other guy would, you know, sucker somebody, and then everyone rushed to that one, and you know, Travis Mullen got headbutted, and then everyone rushed to him, and then he ended up fighting. So whatever, it just kept coming, you know, kept going and going. And every time there was a scrum, I would just kind of go over and grab someone, and you know, I wasn't planning on fighting. And every time I did it, Cam Ward came over, and he's like, "Hey, you know, fuck off! Like, don't do anything." I'm like, "Man, I'm not doing it." Next thing happens, I grab someone else, and then he's getting a little rougher, like he's pulling on my jersey, like, "Hey, get out of here, dude! Like, don't leave me alone. I'm not fighting. Just fucking leave me alone. Just make sure no one gets hurt, right?" And then it happened one more time, and finally, I was like, "Okay, that's enough." I said, "Okay, why don't me and you fight?" And he's like, "You know, no, I'm not fighting." I said, "Well, we can do one of two things." And you can see it. If you watch the video, you can see it. I'm talking to him. I said, "We could fight right now, or when the period starts next period, I'm just going to come down and fight you." And then as soon as I said that, he just grabbed my screen right away and pulled my helmet off. And then we started fighting. And what was funny is that fight ended the whole brawl too. Everyone stopped to watch us.
Yeah.
And that was it. Once we stopped fighting, it was done.
If you guys would have fought right away, maybe
and it was Boy Scout night there at
of course school. It is. Yeah.
Tons of kids.
Oh, tons of kids. It was a
I
don't know how you feel about that, Riles, but like when you're a part of that, it is kind of scary. You don't want anyone to get hurt. You know, if it's a one-on-one fight, it's different. But when guys are just suckering each other and headbutting, like it was kind of a scary moment for a little bit. And then obviously me and Cam had to finish it off.
Yeah.
Yeah. Had to end it all.
Yeah. That was one of those rare ones that like you see, the linesman getting carted off. I didn't know he broke his femur. I could have sworn there was someone else laying on the ice. Yeah, this is where guys get fingers stepped on and crazy shit could happen.
Anything.
Yeah. I mean, you got coaches involved, like, you know, who knows what could happen.
I don't think I've ever seen coaches on the ice chucking. I remember when that happened and watching the video, like, oh my God. Because I think the boys came into the room and were like talking about it. I'm like,
that was a melee. Yeah, you know, you never want to see anybody get hurt, obviously, right? I mean, there's a fine line between message sending and, you know, a good, honest one-on-one battle and some bullshit
that. They had guys skating around with their shirts on. We had Sean Thornton, Mike Brown,
first round Brown.
He's skating around, no shirt on. It's like, oh man, this is.
With the guns, the tattoo, and the guns. I thought that was pretty cool. He was a good dude.
Yeah, do you know what was funny about that too? They had Mike Commodore on the ice.
Right? Oh, that's right. Commie's there.
So when I came out of the room, I skated towards the bench where one of the scrums was, and I didn't even have my helmet off yet. And Mike Commodore grabs me, and he like pushed me up against the bench, and I'm 23 years old, or whatever. But he's a fucking man.
Yeah,
he's a big guy. So just the way he grabbed me and shoved me up against the bench, I was like, oh my God, I'm gonna get my ass kicked right now. As soon as he grabbed me, Thordy came over and grabbed him and was like, hey, get out of here.
Yeah.
And he stopped right away, thank God. But I'll never forget that. When he grabbed me, I was like, oh Jesus, this guy's stronger than most people.
Yeah, right. Yeah, no kidding. We also had Brent Myers over there too, right?
Yeah, they had Myers over there too.
Myers had his shirt off. I felt bad for him because he had about five guys going after him. Thordy, Brownie.
Jeez.
I think Ty Jones was on the ice. We had a good lineup that could do some damage. So
Norfolk was always tough.
Yeah, always tough. Like. Yeah.
Yeah, the old Brophy days before the couple years before me is when Brophy was there, and they were known for the slap shot shenanigans.
Yeah, that's right. That's right.
Yeah.
One other thing I wanted to bring up about one of your moments in the American League was the overtime game. Five overtimes, 98 saves, man. Like, were you just like ready to tap out, or what's your? I know the players, like, I couldn't even imagine. I know as a equipment guy, I'd be exhausted, but I can't even imagine like what's going on in your mind. Kind of walk us through that as a goalie, like what you're thinking.
Well, I was a guy, you know, you knew me, like I had to drink a lot of fluids, right? I was always getting my drinks ready. And so me just trying to stay hydrated, I think that was the hardest part for me. And trying to, you know, get a protein bar and a banana and get some energy back. But mentally, again, you see me in the room, I'm always mentally prepared, you know, in between periods, I got my head down and I'm visualizing. So after that many periods, it got pretty exhausting.
I'm sure.
But you know, once you're playing, you get in the zone and it's just, you just play, right? When they scored, I honestly can't say I was too disappointed. I, you know, it was like, oh man, all right, well, we're done. And then I slowly skated off the ice. I went and sat in my stall probably for another half hour and just didn't move.
Yeah, don't even want to totally take your gear.
Mentally and physically exhausted. Oh. And I lost about 12 pounds after that game.
Oh, wow.
Wow.
And that was with me drinking, like I said, you know how much I drank.
That's insane.
Three or four Gatorades and Gatorade on my net. Like, I pounded water all game. Like, it was bad, yeah.
That's insane.
That's incredible.
Then I went to the KHL and had a four overtime war.
You did?
Oh, wow.
Yeah, I won that one. I think it just got beat couple years back for the longest KHL game, so I had it in both.
How did you like that experience over there?
Yeah, it was, you know, I've never been to Europe before or anywhere overseas, so it was an eye-opener for me. You know, Donetsk was a good city, and you know, Ruslan Fedotenko was the one that called me and got me to go over there.
Oh, okay.
So there was, you know, some good guys over there, and my teammates were good, but you know, it wasn't great living, and you're traveling around Russia and going, staying in, you know, not so nice hotels. But then you go to St. Pete's and you're like, oh, wow, this is nice city.
This is cool. Yeah.
And then you go to another city and they're like, hey, you stay in room, you don't move.
Yeah. Right. Okay.
Like, you can't even leave your hotel room. You do your meal downstairs, go right back to your room. So, you know, it was just, the hockey was different. It was like beer league hockey with really good players. That's what I always refer to it. But obviously being away from my family was the toughest thing. They were back home, and just missing them for the whole year. I got to come back sometimes for 3 or 4 days, but tough being away from them.
Yeah, I can imagine.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Just bouncing back to your early days in the American League and then your transition to the NHL. The following year, after your first year, you landed up playing, I think, 8 games with the Blackhawks. And then the next year, pretty much, you know, well, you're full-time or you're backup, right? I mean, 35 games. And then the following year was the lockout. I mean, did you find that the lockout kind of inhibited your progress in some way?
Yeah. Well, I, you know, I would never say anything bad about the Blackhawks, the way they groomed me and got me back, you know, kind of brought me into the NHL. I paid my dues in the AHL, and they, you know, each year they're giving me more and more games.
Mm-hmm.
The one year I ended up backing up with Jocelyn Thibeault, he got hurt a little bit, so I got to play some games, which was great. Then the lockout did come, and I played and had a good season. And then I got hurt about a month before playoffs. I had a stomach injury, groin, you know, that sports hernia. Yeah. And at that time, it was really, nobody knew what it was. So I battled, didn't play in playoffs, and then had surgery about a month after the season. So I kind of went all summer, you know, just trying to rehab and get back. I went to camp. I skated like one or two times before I went to camp in Chicago. And then that year, they ended up sending me down and then trading me to Buffalo.
So
yeah. And then I went to Buffalo, where they had three goalies in Buffalo,
And then we split with Jean-Marc Pelletier, was with Florida. So we had the two teams in Rochester.
Oh, yeah.
So I played half the games there, but I went from playing 34 games in the NHL down to the AHL and just splitting games with a different organization and not really getting cracked to get back to the NHL. So yeah, it definitely hurt me. But the injury thing was just tough. You know, year, you know, Riles, like nowadays you get surgery and you're on the bike the next day and you're within 3 or 4 weeks, you're ready to go. Right. Back then when I got that surgery, it was like, you don't do anything for 4 weeks. Like that's it was right. 2 weeks of nothing, 2 weeks of starting to just walk and then light stretch. So I was 6 weeks after surgery, just still not even in anywhere near being good shape.
Right.
So I rolled into camp out of shape and obviously the injury just kind of screwed me over there.
Yeah. It's tough. Yeah. Nothing fun about injuries. It's, it seems like the same old story, right? It's earning your spot back. It's getting back to where you were. Not an easy thing to do, especially when you talk about your core, right? I mean, it's like an interesting place to get injured.
Especially, hockey players. That's bad for
me. I've definitely had my string of bad luck with the injuries. Like after 2010, I had my high ankle sprain, went to back surgery, and then hip surgery all within a year and a half. So
that's
like
insane, man.
It was tough, really, to train the way I wanted to get back to the way I needed to be. It was pretty tough.
Well, your first trip here with the Flyers was 2006-07, and I think you came in, we got you off waivers, we claimed you, right? And you came in, you played like four games, I believe.
Yeah.
And then you come back in 2009-2010. It was a goalie carousel that year, obviously, but one of the greatest years of my life, and I know Riles,
me too,
the same, and probably for you as well, but the late, great, Ray Emery, you know, ended up with a really bad injury that we thought would end his career. And you come in, and then the playoffs, man, like want to talk a little bit about like the city, like how pumped up and the buzz every day during the playoffs, you know, like it was an unreal scene. Everywhere you go, there's flags, there's banners, you know, the fans were amazing. What did you think about all that?
Well, it's funny how people always ask me, you know, I get the question is what was your favorite year, or favorite team you played for? And right away I just say the Flyers, you know, in 2010. And they said, well, you know, the way it ended, you know, and it was disappointing for you. You really think that was, you know, the best year? I'm like, yeah. There's no way to look at that. And people don't understand unless you were in Philly or around, you know, like guys like us or even people that were in the city. To see the buzz, like you said, around the city, the flags, the radio, they were making songs. Like, it was just unheard of. Like, I've never seen anything like that. I've never been a part of anything like that. You know, you go to a restaurant or you just walk through the mall and you got people asking for autographs and just saying, you know, good luck, man, good luck, and cheering for you and let's go Flyers chants at the mall. Like,
it was
amazing. And it's hard to not think. Obviously, it was disappointing the way it ended, not winning, but just the fans and the people of Philadelphia was incredible. And it's something, obviously, I'm sure you feel the same way, Riles, you'll never forget, and memories for life for sure.
Yeah, it was an incredible, incredible season. And, you know, for me personally, I only dressed 17 games that year. So, you know, kind of like the way you're saying, like, you know, like how could that season be, you know, one of the most memorable seasons of your life? Well, obviously, I mean, you go to the finals and just how we got there and the energy, you know, like the energy and the momentum that we generated as a team. But certainly an amazing vibe and something that you'll never forget because of the experience itself was just so surreal. I mean, you got a whole city behind you that's, you know, I mean, obviously supporting in every possible way. But obviously, it's a tough way to go down. But nonetheless, it was an amazing ride. And, you know, it's grateful for the experience, obviously.
Yeah, for sure. And you know what, Riles? I just want to throw this out here because I do think about this quite often, how the way you presented yourself that whole playoff, the way you were out for every warm-up, after you take your stuff off and you're in the room, I know the gym across in 45-minute bike with the workout and, you know, and I was with you for some of that, you know, with my injuries and stuff, but people don't realize what you went through that year. But your attitude and everything was amazing. And
it was just awesome to see that you were always around, and you were a huge part of that team. And I know the guys love having you around. So I just wanted to thank you for that for sure.
Yeah. Thanks, Lates.
It's not easy. It's not easy to do.
Some
guys that go for a warm up and it's like, oh, I'm not playing. Like, your attitude was awesome. You were always patrolling the red line and, you know, just having fun in warm ups. And even you, Nasty, like, people don't realize how big of a part the trainers play in something like that, to keep the guys always lighthearted and having fun. And the way you guys did that in that room and always kept everyone upbeat, it was amazing all year.
Yeah, it was awesome. Yeah, thanks for saying that. It was so much fun. And speaking of, like, you jump right in. You've coming off an injury. Mm-hmm. You jump into the Boston series. I mean, that might have been one of the coolest things ever, coming back in that series from three down. Like, I talk about it all the time. I don't care. Like, people get sick of hearing it. It was it was fucking amazing, man. And yeah. You come in, shut the door. We come back and win that series. And then Montreal, three shutouts. Like, we get them 4-1. I mean, talk about that. Like, you were in a zone, eh? Like, the team was playing well, obviously, but like, yeah, three shutouts. I don't even know if that is that a record. That might be.
Yeah, in the conference finals, I think there's one or two other goalies that have ever done that in the conference finals.
That was amazing. So,
yeah, it was. Obviously, jumping, like, that was my first game on the bench to jump in, down 3-1 in the series. I think we were winning that game 1-0, I think, when I went in. We ended up getting a shared shutout, me and Bush, that game.
Yeah.
But there was a lot of nerves that first, like, 5 minutes, and the team did an amazing job just keeping the puck away from me, right, just to get my feet under me. And but as that series went on, and then in Montreal, you're just getting that rhythm, and you're just focused, and the team's playing good. And really, you just have to make the saves that you're supposed to make. You know, obviously the big saves, they come once in a while, but you just have to give timely saves, and the team was really rallying in front of me, and it was a great experience, and we kind of just clicked as a unit, as the whole team together.
Yeah, for sure. Yeah. How about that building when Richie scored that goal in game five? Me too. I think that was definitely the loudest I ever heard that place. That's one of my, I always tell Richie, that's my favorite goal I've ever seen, just because of the whole shift. That's what it's called.
The shift.
It's like called the shift. Mike Richards, the shift. But he tries to decapitate someone.
Oh,
go down on the two. On, you know, Kobe misses the, you know, tries to score, and just the whole thing. But that was one of my favorite moments out of that whole thing. And speaking about Boston as well, like, you forget kind of in game seven, we go down 3-0.
Yeah.
And you're kind of like, man, it was a great effort. You know, you don't ever say we're not, but Lavi called the timeout. Like, just get one.
Just get one.
JVR, you know, shoots it off someone's stick and it trickles in. And all of a sudden, we just started going.
Momentum changed pretty quick on that game. And now my Spitfires are down 3-0 right now. So I had to talk to Old Shane right yesterday and Maggio and kind of give them the pep talk about. You know, I looked over at Savvy. I'm like, I did it against this guy over here.
right.
It's cool. Yeah. They just got to believe. And I said the same thing Lavi said to us. You know, can we beat this team in one game? Can we win the next game? Yeah, like, we can. Like, you're not looking at, can we win this whole series? Where it's tough to do. Only how many teams have done it. You're looking at one game, and that was Lavi's. After every win, it was, can we win this next game? Can we beat this team this game? And we did.
Yep.
So.
Nasty Knuckles listeners, it's time to get your real estate in top form. You need DLI Commercial to help you on your next construction project. These experts know how to take your project from the penalty box to all-star caliber. From complete buildouts to major renovations, they've got you covered. Let DLI Commercial help you make your next construction project a real power play. For more deets, you need to head on over to their website, DLICommercial.com.
Hey, folks, I'm Mark Maron from the WTF Podcast, and this episode is brought to you by Kleenex Ultra Soft Tissues, your ally to help tackle your allergy symptoms this season. I love the change of seasons, but nobody loves pollen and all those other things floating in the air that make you sneeze during this nice weather. Kleenex Ultra Soft Tissues are hypoallergenic and allergist approved. So fight back against watery eyes and runny noses without worrying about irritating your skin. For this allergy season, grab Kleenex and face allergies head on.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds. At Mint Mobile, we like to do the opposite of what Big Wireless does. They charge you a lot, we charge you a little. So naturally, when they announced they'd be raising their prices due to inflation, we decided to deflate our prices due to not hating you. That's right. We're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month slows. Full terms at mintmobile.com.
Do you remember who's backing you up in Boston?
Backy, right?
Yes, that's Backy. Right. Yeah, trivia about, question. Yeah. Yeah, Backy, what a good dude he was, man.
He was awesome. The guy drank more coffee than I think I've ever seen anyone do.
More Labby?
This guy would have eight coffees. This guy would have eight coffees before warm-ups.
That's
like Dexter. He looked like Dexter.
He did look like Dexter.
You know, one of those
Big Deppin? Right.
Such a great guy, though.
He did look like Dexter.
He did, the Swedish
Juice. Yeah, great guy, man. Great guy. Yeah. But yeah, man, what memories, man. It just, you know, it was awesome, man. And you were obviously a huge part of it.
Yeah.
It's a lot of fun.
Talk about, like, obviously you don't want to bring it up, but, like, you know, game six there, the goal. I mean,
Kaner, that dickhead.
Yeah. I mean, like, obviously, you probably knew before the building did that it went in, right? I mean, it's like, what's the instant emotion that you feel in that moment?
Well, you know, you're focused in a game, and when I seen the puck in the net, it was just more of a
motherfucker,
just a letdown. And then I was thinking, okay, everyone was confused. I wanted to get the puck out of the net without anybody knowing, right? That was my first thought. But then I look over and the refs are going upstairs and like, hey, that's not happening.
Yeah.
No, it was just – it was such a great playoff run, and the whole thing was just so amazing. Just to end like that was just a feeling you obviously can't describe. And, you know, even after – weeks after, months after, years after, it's still obviously in my head. And you hear people talk about it and blame me, then other people are saying that, you know, we wouldn't have been there without me. So it's just mixed emotions all the time, but obviously it's sure. My life, right? I learned to accept it that happened, and it was a good player that scored the goal.
Not bad.
It wasn't like it was Ben Eager sniped, you know, from that angle or something like that, right? But
no, man.
Yeah, like, it's just my life now, you know. It's I've accepted it, and it was disappointing, but again, you look back at the whole run, it was amazing. And would I give it up? No, I wouldn't give that up.
No way. We're not there if it's not for you. And it's never on one person anyway, but we were never there if it wasn't for you. And I think majority of people know that.
Yeah,
that know
people that understand the game and the following understand. They can't pin one goal on you and the loss on you. I mean, it's just it's the nature of the beast, man. When you're in these positions, especially as a goalie, right? I mean, it's like you're in pro sports. Yeah, exactly. And it's easy to just highlight the one. But obviously, there's way more to it than that. And I mean, you got to give the guys some credit. You got to give them as a team some credit. I mean, it's no joke.
Yeah, they're a good team.
It's tough to win any sport. Hockey's tough to win, and you know, that's just the nature of the beast, right? You said you have to have thick skin, and you have to, you know, put a period on it and just move on, right? I mean, it is what it is, and it's just part of the sport, part of the way things work. Sometimes it's not easy to win.
Well, I'll tell you a story. After all that happened, you know, obviously I just sat at home the next couple of days and a little depressed, and I get a call. I became friends with William Myers, right? So he calls me, and Doc Myers says, "Hey, let's go to a ball game tonight." And I was like, "Nah, I don't want to go out." And he's like, "No, come on, it'd be good for you." And so he fought with me for a bit, and I ended up going with them. And about the third inning, they end up putting me on the scoreboard and just congratulating me on the season, and I got a standing O at the baseball.
Wow. Game. Amazing. I didn't know that. That's awesome.
That's awesome.
That's super cool.
Yeah. So then after I did that, I ended up doing an interview, you know, 2 minutes later, I had to run up, do an interview. Then I came back to my seat, and then there was a lineup of about 100-200 people down the stairs wanting an autograph. And this big security guard walks over and stands beside me, looks at me, and goes, "Are we going to do this all game?" really? And I'm like, well, I kind of want to watch the game. And he goes, you know, you either sit here and it's going to be a disaster for everyone, or you just kind of leave or whatever, right?
So yeah.
we had to leave in like the fifth inning.
Oh, man.
Because there's too many people lined up for autographs and stuff. But that, you know, just that feeling was pretty amazing. And, you know, thanks to Doc for at least getting me out and getting my spirits up a bit.
Yeah, right. That's awesome.
Yeah. And the real fans know.
They right? know.
I mean,
yeah.
like the ones the that know. Actually understand the game, understand the dynamic of sport and specifically hockey. Like they know what's up. And I mean, you were loved. I mean, the run is insane. I mean, you stepped in an amazing time and in an interesting time and stepped up and, you know, and carried that momentum, helped carry that momentum. It was insane. Yeah. Like the feeling, like you said, I wasn't playing, but I was around, and that feeling was for real. Like that was no joke.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, it was just amazing how I think it hurt even more that it just felt the whole time that this was a special year.
Yeah.
You know, the way we got into playoffs, the way we come back from. So like the whole storyline was just amazing. It just felt like, hey, this is going to happen.
Yeah. You know
what I mean, it should happen. And when it didn't, it was just even more disappointing. But like, again, it was amazing. Our coaching staff to trainers, to players, to everyone. It was incredible.
Are you still on the dry island?
I didn't put my name up on the board.
Neither did I. Yeah.
No. And, you know, I don't know who it was. Somebody came out to me and they asked me if I was going to put my name up. And I said, no. You know, I was thinking about it. And they just said, well, I don't want to lie.
Exactly.
You know what I mean? Right. Like, you want me to put my name down there, but I'm still going to have a glass of wine. And
yeah.
And that's when I, you know, I don't drink a lot, but I do have a drink, you know, here and there after a game, I go home, have a beer or whatever. I'm just not going to lie about it. So I didn't put my name up there, but
I didn't either for that exact reason. If you be honest, I mean, like the worst thing you could do is put it up there and not be honest with it. Right. So if not that I was out getting, well, maybe I was partying. Yeah, I was partying a little too much, but I was also working my ass off to make up for
exactly.
it.
Yeah. Exactly.
Yeah.
The old gym, man. We hung out quite a bit with those workouts.
Oh yeah.
When I was at the old gym across in 6 a.m.
You know, oh man.
45 minute on the stepper, 30 minutes on the bike, 10 minutes on the VersaClimber, then your workout and rehab is. And I come in and Nasty sitting in the locker room bouncing the music. Harry's got his music blaring, sharpening skate. I'm like, Jesus, God.
Oh, yeah.
What a life. I know, right? It was fun, man. Never took it for granted.
Huggy's giving high fives to everyone we walk in.
Oh, yeah.
It used to make me laugh. I think we said this before, but Prongs, every morning, he'd come in that side door and Huggy, morning, Chris. You know, and he'd go, fuck you, Snuggles, and laugh. You know, he was kidding around, but that year was just amazing, man.
Hey, how about the time where I was waiting for pants for 2 months, and they show up, and
listen
and
to this.
Huggy grabs the old X-Acto knife and opens the box, opens it up
right through the pants.
What the hell? He brings it to Nasty and goes, it has a slit down it. He
was all excited. We've been waiting on his pants.
Oh my God.
Well, he's like, I opened the box, but I think I cut him. I'm like, you think?
Oh my God.
It couldn't have been anywhere.
You should give him a new nickname.
Oh, that's funny. Man. I forgot about that till you just said that.
That's pretty funny.
That's crazy.
Well, talk about the following year, right? I mean, you land up obviously sticking around. I guess you get hurt in preseason. Is that how it went down?
Yeah. That's what I had my – well, I did have a back injury in 2010, the whole playoffs. My back was messed
that's
up.
That's right.
And stiff and sore. And, so I went home, did my rehab all that summer, and I was feeling good. I went first exhibition game against Toronto. My whole leg went numb. I had dropped foot. It was – you know, I had shooting pain down my leg, and the doc gave me 2 weeks. It didn't get any better, so they did surgery. So – that whole year was, I think I got back just after Christmas. I played in LA just after New Year's. So I played one game, then they put me in the minors for the rest of the year. And so that was, you know, unfortunate that we went from, you know, losing the Stanley Cup finals to getting injured to the minors and just trying to get back, you know, and it was a tough year.
Yeah. I tell you what, I said this when we started, like, you're one of the like, I think best professionals I ever worked with. Like, you're just such a professional guy, but the mental, you know, like the mental part of the game, especially when you're getting hurt, and it, not just a goalie, but as a player, and you, you gotta, you know, go back. Like you said, you were just in the finals, man. Yeah. You know, you're three shutouts in a conference final to go to the Stanley Cup finals. It's crazy. And then the next year, you know, that's, is that,
not to mention showing up in Adirondack.
Yeah, yeah. And you have to go to Adirondack. Oh, I I did write that down. Zombies.
Zombieland. Ryle's the first time I got there, and I said, "How's the city?" He's like, "This is Zombieland." And he goes, "I go to the mall," and he goes, "Everyone, it's like everyone just twisted their ankle in the snow because it's snowing so long. Everyone's got bad knees in the snow, and everyone's just dragging a leg and." Everyone's just miserable because the sun does not shine there.
What an experience.
You know, that's what I kind of took pride in my whole career is that, I did go up and down, and that's fine. But every time I got sent down, I had this attitude like, you know, if I just sit here and don't care and don't work, I'm not going to get back to the NHL.
That's right.
And I tell all these kids, these younger kids this now and say, if you do get sent down, it's okay. Okay, your attitude just has to be like, what do I have to do to get back to where I need to be or where I want to be?
Right.
And I always wanted to be in the NHL. So I went down, I still worked my butt off. I didn't take anything for granted. I never whined. I never pouted. I did what I had to do. And, you know, somehow I always seemed to slip back in the NHL for a little while and get a chance again and stick for a bit and then get sent down or injury or back down, whatever. I was up and down and that's okay.
Yeah, I mean, that is okay. And what you said is exactly it. I mean, you had that attitude, and, you know, Nasty's talking about the pro in you. I mean, you came down and you would have never known that you were just in the NHL finals, you know, and the year before. And pro, you know, guys look up to you. You're just, you know, you carry yourself the right way. And obviously the reason why you landed up back up again with the Flyers in the playoffs that year, right? And, So, I mean, props to you, because this is like, you know, a lesson for all the, you know, the young listeners out there is just like, man, attitude is everything. I mean,
as one of my coaches, Roz, if I went down there and I was miserable and whining, would you want to push for me to get back to the NHL?
Yeah, of course not. No.
So it's all about the drive and the want. And then later in my career, when I was in the minors, you know, I knew I was a third goalie and I was going to be there. So I kind of try to mentor these younger kids coming in, and I was signing deals just to be a mentor for some young kids. And, you know, I'd bring them over for dinner and hang out with them and try to, you know, just support them and talk to them a lot. And a lot of those guys are in the NHL now.
Yeah,
exactly. You're almost the accepting, well, you're obviously accepting where you are in your career, and then you're almost accepting this, like, it's almost like a player development role in a sense, right? It's like you're now becoming a coach in a sense where, and you've accepted this obviously, so you have a good attitude around it where you're mentoring, yeah. Right? Guys need that.
And that's actually, player development is something I wouldn't mind getting into. You know, working with an NHL team and if they have a couple draft picks, go see them, go talk to them, hang out with them, and train them in the summer, that kind of stuff. So that's something I maybe down the line I'll get into.
I bet you will.
Yeah,
I have a feeling you will.
I really do.
I don't think, you know, they probably know there. I was going to say, these kids are lucky to have a guy like you there. The Spitfires, very lucky.
Yeah, 100%. Well, yeah, I mean, guys need, you know, guys like yourself that to lead the way. And I think it's a natural progression. You're in the coaching right now. You're doing your own personal business with the coaching. I mean, it would probably make sense that somewhere down the road, it's like, you know, the network, it's the hockey network itself. Someone lands up in a position that, you know, that you played with, you know, it's probably not too far off, but I could see being amazing at that, because I mean, you lived it. And again, the way you carried yourself and the way you've evolved. So.
Yeah. That's one thing when I was my first year, I was with Jocelyn Thibault was my goalie partner in Chicago. So I really I could say he mentored me, and I followed him and really studied him as a person and as a goalie. And there was a time that season where I looked at him and said, this is what, when I'm 35, 37 years old, that's what I want to be like. He was an absolute pro. He worked hard. He was kind. He was good to the media. Like, he was just a good guy. And I'm like, hey, that's what I want to do. When I'm 35, 37, I want to have that same attitude and work hard. And And, you know, people say that, yeah, I did that. So pretty happy with that.
Late, you're only 41, right?
41, yeah.
You're only 41 years. You can still be playing. Shit, Andy's still playing, eh?
I know, geez.
Greg Anderson, he's still kicking.
My body, as soon as I stop playing, guys,
sees right up.
The pads off, yeah, my hips. I can still play, but it would take me a good 2 months to get back into shape, probably.
Your hips don't lie.
I'm sure. Yeah. And every time you play, it leaves a stain, too. Like, I know when I play pickup here, I'm hurting for like 2 or 3 days because it's just so hard on the hips.
Also, now we're finding out why you're not coming to our games. He's still sore now.
Oh, man.
Yeah, I did a Spitz practice last year, and I put my pads on for the first time in like 8 or 9 months, and I did a full hour. My legs the next day were just done.
Oh,
like sore, you know, you do a work, you haven't done a workout in a year, and you decide to, hey, I'm going to do 8 reps or eight sets of squats today. That's what they felt like.
I was going to say,
they were done.
Going down in that butterfly and kicking and pushing. Like you must, could you walk the next day?
It was tough. Yeah. Still showed the boys up a little bit though.
Yeah. There you go.
Sure still had it.
Yeah. Still got it.
Still got it.
That's awesome.
What do you see with the younger generation attitudes towards the game, or just towards we'll say life? But do you see a little bit of entitlement? Do you see a difference between, like, you know, the culture of guys when you played maybe to the tail end versus the guys now?
For sure, it's definitely changed the way kids are being coached now.
Yeah,
you know, I had Daryl Sutter in Chicago was a tough coach and a very strict motivator. And now we're just, you know, we're told not to put kids down and keep them positive. And so it's definitely just taking a turn on how, to treat people. And I understand that to a certain extent, but, there's times where guys need to see negative stuff and, you know, for teaching, you know?
Right.
So, you know, I get both sides of it. But definitely these kids are coming in, you know, haven't been yelled at before or haven't been punished or told not to do things and just kind of let loose and to do their own thing. So it's definitely different for sure.
Yeah. I mean, there's obviously a fine line between teaching clips, even though they land up being negative and or demeaning a player, right? Like, I mean, the old school way was like making you feel like a bag of shit, but there's no teaching in it, right?
Yeah.
But like showing a guy a turnover or a mistake isn't, I mean, at least in my opinion, isn't demeaning. That's just like, that's his coaching. That's his teaching. Yeah. But I think there's a fine line, right? I mean, you can't have them too soft, but I also like agree with, like, you know, long gone are the days where like you're going to fear the player into playing better. Right. I'm not sure if that even ever worked, but I mean, some guys maybe said it did, but we're way past that.
Yeah. Yeah. It's definitely different. Even in, like, for me, I learned last year, I came in and we had a younger guy and I said, are you a rookie? And he looked at me and goes, there's no rookies. And I said, what do you mean there's no rookies? And he said, well, you weren't there for the meeting, but there's a league rule that there's no rookies in the OHL. You're not allowed to call someone a rookie or make them do certain things, and everyone's equal. And so that's just the way things are now. You know, I didn't know that. I was like, oh, okay.
Yeah, that's crazy.
So rookies never grab the bags and load the bus or anything like that?
Everyone's expected to do stuff and help out and do their part. And yeah, there's no centering people out. No, you know, you got to clean the bus because it's your rookie. And so, like I said, it's a different way and kids are doing things different now. And
we have with the Rebels, they have different groups. So there's a bus group cleanup. There's guys that are supposed to kind of, everyone brings their bag out, but there's guys that got to make sure everything comes off once guys grab their bag, and they kind of divide it up like that. But it's no, like, you're a rookie, you got to do this, but they do call the rookies rookies.
Yeah. I mean, the first year guy is a rookie, right?
I think they're just trying to get rid of all the hazing stuff and
of course,
that experience for young kids, that might be scared to come in. And yeah, I totally understand that, but
I understand that too.
It's just different from what we,
you know, a little different
down the bus when I was in junior B, you know, like stuff like that. It was different. For fun. It was never, like, I never had anything bad or seen anything bad, but it was just fun stuff.
Yeah. Right. Yeah, exactly. Anything you want to plug before we let you go? Any nonprofits, any foundations you're involved in? Anything cool going on?
No, all good.
I'm going to be sending Elvie up your way for one of your camps.
Sounds good. So, or maybe I'll come up there for a camp one time.
Yeah.
You got to make your way this way.
Yeah.
For sure.
Get in the game. Get you out there.
Yeah.
Strap the blades on for Natty Ice.
Yeah, sometimes. Joey, no, he didn't miss last week, but he misses sometimes. We'll take you any day of the week, brother.
Yeah.
Awesome. Well, great seeing you a lot, late, sir. Appreciate you hopping on, and good luck with the rest of the season. You guys in playoffs yet, or where are you guys at?
Yeah, we're down 3-0 right now in the playoffs.
Oh, shit.
Oh yeah, okay. that's the first round.
Yeah, so we got some work to do, but
we have the team to do it.
So we, like I said, one at a time, we'll get her done.
That's awesome, man. We miss seeing you, brother.
Yeah,
great catching up with you, man. Stay in better touch.
Yeah. All right, boys. Take care. All
right. Thanks. See you later. Appreciate
it. Thanks, brother.
Take care, boys.
Big thank you to our friend Michael Layton for hopping on. What an amazing human, pro.
He is. Good man.
Nice to see him again. See him doing well.
Yeah, it's cool that he's back in the game and working with another buddy of ours, Andy Delmore. But I know what he means, getting back in the room and stuff. It's a lot of fun, and I'm sure he's doing a great job. Like he's like we said to him, like he's an unbelievable pro.
Yeah,
he got it his whole career, and that's why he was successful.
Yeah, and there's no surprise that he's in that position, and
right,
and trying to work his way up, as he mentioned. You know, maybe a potential player development role down the road. Yeah. But coaching, being around guys. I mean, he's got the personality, he's got the resume. And the professionalism as we're talking about. So
yeah, for sure.
Appreciate you, Lates, hopping on.
Yeah, man.
I think that's time. It's that time, Nast.
Clear questions.
Clear questions.
Brought to you by Clear Rum. Check them out at clearrum.com. Unbelievable. We're still waiting on some more. Yeah, we got another shipment coming in because
Nasty's getting a little excited.
I am getting excited to get some more.
Sipping.
They're good. They're delicious.
Mm. Now nice and hydrating. Springtime.
Exactly. Perfect weather right now for him. On ice.
Oh.
A little fruity. Throw a little fruit in there. In a glass. Frosty mug. Ice. Clear.
Look out.
Love it.
All right, baller. What we got?
This is from our buddy Bortzy, Adam Bortz.
Oh, Bortzy.
Is it Bortzy?
He wants to know about the power play, which has been league last for the last 2 years. What fixes it? Personnel, new formation? What are league leaders doing that the Flyers are not but should be? This is a disaster, boys.
Well, I mean, I'm not a power play coach, so I'll look to you as being a coach before. What is it? What is it?
Well, I spent a lot of time on the bench watching the power play.
I've seen a lot of good power plays. Yeah.
You know, you look at the best teams in the league. They have, the elite shooters. Right, the elite playmakers that are cranking up their percentages, obviously, right? I mean, again, I'm not downplaying anybody on the Flyers, but it's 2 years in a row, I believe, right?
Yeah.
Like dead last. Well, they had G last year, but they didn't replace G. And, he was, the play goes through G.
Yeah.
Still end up being last. But, I mean, the best power plays have... generally a shooting power play. I mean, not saying you just have to shoot everything, right. But you have, some set shooters that they're moving around the horn and they're just trying to unload the top of the top of the circles in that flank position. Traffic, guys that are at.
Huge,
look at when Simmer is here, the guys the best in the game, and some of these guys that are around the net finding trash screens.
Yeah.
I'm not sure they're doing that,
Right.
But it's not that easy to score goals in the NHL. But you can't be dead last and expect to be in a playoff position. They're usually say one of the same to some degree, right? And I think it's just a lack of offensive production overall, right?
Yeah.
I mean, back end and front end.
The power play for years kept us in playoff hunts and with the Flyers, when going back, like you said, to Simmer and Jake and G and other guys, that we had a decent power play. Honestly, since Joey Mullen was released, our power play, I think we're in the top 10 every year
with him.
And it's no knock against any of the coaches that have come in to run the power play, but it could be a lack of talent. I hate saying that, but that's, like you said, the top ones are top end teams with top end talent. But since Joey Mullen left or was, you know, forced to leave, we haven't been quite as good. So that's a great question.
Yeah.
I don't have the X's and O answers for it, but like you said, traffic's huge.
Yeah.
You know, getting a shot through from the point. You know, everybody's always screaming, shoot, shoot. Well, sometimes you don't have that lane and you're going to throw it off a guy's shin pad and they're going down.
Exactly. You don't want to be shooting in shin pads.
So, but you got to, you got to create, you know, we saw a goal the other night. It was actually against the Flyers, that bumper play.
Yeah.
That, I mean, that's a, you know, you don't see that a lot. I mean, that's coaching, I guess, and what the coaches want to do. But
yeah, at the end of the day, it's execution, right?
Yes.
I mean, all these teams watch the same amount of video, right? They're always working on it. It's the passing. Is the passing crisp and, like, you know, in the wheelhouse where you can make those little bumper plays, like, yeah, you know, quick execution. And then even on the shots, it's like it's getting the pucks through,
yeah,
you know, not getting them blocked, and then, you know, generating a secondary opportunity. But to me, it's, you know, it's an execution thing. So, you know, naturally, if you had, you know, a few more offensive players,
yeah,
you know, you'd probably squeeze out a few extra goals naturally, right? It's not, yeah, so much. I don't think it's so much the you know, the X's and O's. It's about the execution, because you, right, can have the best, you know, the best, you know, formation and strategy, but if you're not executing,
yeah,
if the passes aren't crisp, you know, if they're not laying in the wheelhouse for these one-timer shots, because that's where, you know, that's the split second that you lose. If it's not a nicely, yeah, delivered pass,
that's true.
Well, now the guy's got to maybe stop it for a second, then it's got to go back around the horn, the guys get set back up. So, yeah, there's a lot to it, but to me, it's just maybe just a lack of, you know, high-end offensive production that would squeeze you out an extra, you know, goal or two every, you know, game or two, right?
Yeah.
I mean, it's like, and then that's the difference of being bottom, you know, of the league, middle pack into maybe the higher, yeah, percentile there. So,
yeah, good question, though.
Really good question.
Philadelphia Flyagram over on Instagram wants to know, what do you guys think about the increasing advertisements, particularly on the jerseys? And do you see the Flyers with jersey advertisements anytime soon?
It's probably inevitable that's going to happen.
It probably is. I mean, you see it on helmets.
Yeah. Money talks.
Yeah.
I mean, it's a corporate game, unfortunately. And anywhere they can make some extra money, they're gonna sell that real estate, I'm sure, yep, just like the European leagues do.
You know, I hope it doesn't get to that on the pants and everything.
I hope not either, but I don't think we're too far off to seeing something on the jersey. You know,
right.
I'm not even sure if they, you know, maybe a shoulder or a collar or, yeah, something where, you know, the camera can get in there and obviously highlight the company itself. But I mean, to me, there's just a matter of time probably before you see more advertisement on the jerseys.
Yeah,
my opinion. For sure.
Yeah, I agree.
We got one more from KMcLaughlin77 over on Instagram. What do you guys think Danny B's first trade will be?
Wow, good question, man.
Yeah, I mean, it's...
There's a number of guys you hear and talked about.
Yeah, you hear a lot of names thrown out there, but you have to have a trade partner too, right? And I think that's generally the challenge always. It's like not the guy you want to trade, but you, yeah, have someone that's going to actually work out a trade. But, you know, I mean, I think a guy like Hazy is probably the top of the list. Is probably, you know, like a guy that's probably on the trade blocks, you know.
Yeah, I mean, I would think he is, but you know, you got to get creative with his salary.
Well, I think this is the challenge always, right?
Yeah.
It's like, it's hard to say who it's going to be, because I think there's a lot of inner workings that need to happen and play out for you actually move the guys you want to. You're not going to just trade guys just for trading.
It could be someone you don't expect too, because someone could just come in with some crazy,
amazing
offer
deal, yeah,
to
right.
Danny, which I don't think people are going to be coming at him right away with that. Why would you, right? You know the Flyers need to do some retooling or whatever you want to call it, trades, and you know, he's going to get rid of some contracts. But I don't think Provy's a hard guy to move.
I don't think
and
so.
And I don't want him to go anywhere, but I just think teams, he's 26 years old.
Yeah,
like,
he's still kind of in his prime. He's got value.
Yeah.
He'd probably be the easiest.
Yeah, so... If he wants to move Provy, I think he's going to be an easy guy to move,
mm-hmm,
to me. But I don't know. It's an interesting question, but I think it's hard to say who it's going to be first because, you know, with Hazy, we heard some talk about Columbus, but you're going to have to keep some salary.
Yeah.
Like a lot, so many things creative, go in, like you said, into it. Sanny, I don't think, I've heard his name, but with that contract and the years, like it starts next year, yeah, right? Like, that's a hard contract to move. Yeah. He hasn't had the greatest year, the best year, obviously, of his career.
Right. What about a guy like Lidstrom?
Oh, Chris Mayer. Yeah. Lidzy.
Yeah, Lidzy. Risto.
Risto.
I mean, he's playing better.
He is playing better.
You know, he seems to be, kind of where he should be for what they're paying him.
Right.
I mean, maybe rising his stocks a little bit.
Yeah.
I mean, do you think a guy like that could be moved? What do you think?
I mean, if a team, like Baller was saying earlier, he's right-handed shot. You know, when he wants to play physical, he does. But, yeah, that's a guy, too. Like, maybe someone has interest in him,
Yeah. Yeah. So
it will be interesting to see once this starts, once the season's over and things start to happen, what Danny's first moves are.
Yeah. His first moves might not be what he wants to be the first move. It's going to be based on, obviously, the deal itself making sense for him to actually pull the trigger on it. So I'm sure they're having daily conversations, right? Daily conversations. But then at the end of the day, you have to wait for the season to be over to actually, actually take action on some of these conversations you're having, actually engage other GMs on potential deals. Because right now it's just like, okay, well, we have a list of guys we want to move.
Right.
But it doesn't always work that way either. So as we know.
And there's always, you never know where you're going to end up in the draft. Well, probably not going to get number one, but if you do, like you said a few weeks ago, that changes everything.
Did you trade that pick?
I think I might hold on to it. What would you have to offer? What would you have to offer a team for that? Whoever wins the lottery here, what do you have to offer to get that pick? Your whole team?
Oh, man.
Oh, that'd be interesting. No, I wouldn't trade it.
No. You might want to hold on to that one.
I think you hold on to this one. Yeah.
Oh, man, that's good.
So, yeah, great question. I don't know. I'm kind of interested and excited to see what Danny does first,
Yep, I'm excited as well.
So,
well, that's a wrap, Nast.
That's it.
Clear questions in the books.
Yep.
Episode 112.
112.
In the books. Until next week for episode 113, make sure you subscribe, like our content, ask a question, have a comment.
Appreciate it.
Tell Nasty how good he looks. And until then, stay safe, knuckleheads.
See ya.